And welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. A former advisor to Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari says the new currency policy is working just fine.
Nigeria and the Nigerian government and the petroleum industry itself, the petroleum sector, should really look, take a look at this situation, engage with the artisanal refiners, and then supply them crude. They will pay.
UNICEF warns 11 countries in Eastern and Southern Africa are experiencing a worrying cholera outbreak.
In Southern Africa, you're having Malawi, which has the most important number of cases. And if you go to the Horn of Africa, where we are having other complications due to drought, you have Somalia, you have Kenya, you have Ethiopia.
And some women, church and civil society leaders say South Sudan is struggling to find lasting peace more than a month after Pope Francis' visit. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, a former senior special assistant to President Muhammadu Buhari on Niger Delta affairs says the new currency policy is working just fine as intended. This despite criticisms that the replacement of old Naira notes with new ones has created difficulties for most Nigerians who depend on cash for their daily business transactions. Critics contend that the new policy prevented some voters from traveling to places they registered to vote in the recent February 25 presidential and parliamentary elections. But Ita Solomon Enang says the new policy is strengthening the Naira against major international currencies, including the US dollar. He also cites what he says is a sharp decline in kidnappings and banditry. Enang, who is also seeking to become governor of Akwa Ibom State, sat down with me.
So, Nigeria and the Nigerian government and the petroleum industry itself, the petroleum sector, should really look, take a look at this situation, engage with the artisanal refiners, and then supply them crude. They will pay. They will not spend as much as they're spending on the conventional security and the unconventional security, the Tompolo and other persons that have engaged. I hope I'm correct. The security companies that have engaged to protect the pipelines. And this is what is also increasing the cost of production. And that cost of production, when it gets to the cost of refined product, it is passed on to the consumers. And this is part of what is causing the inflation in Nigeria, high cost of living, and frustration of Nigerians.
What impact do you think it's having on Nigerians at the moment and the economy?
It is causing inflation, high cost of living. A lot of people are being run out of the economy. A lot of people can't afford two meals. When it is two meals or one, it is no square. It is no square meal. A lot of people can't afford. A lot of people are just living the economic scene. A lot of people are dying to get to the fast. So we should take steps before the end of this administration to integrate these people and give them a role on roles. I know the action that has been done now has increased the cost, the amount of production from when all these pipelines has been attended to, the leakages, and where there has been the source of leakages and putting pipes and then filling the illegal vessels that has been coming to take oil. That has been reduced now. But then you should engage this downstream until the Dangote, until the Warri, until the Port Harcourt, and of latest, the Kaduna refineries are able to come on stream to refine.
Talk to me about the Naira design. The government has been criticized by almost everybody that the timing was wrong and that it created a lot of problems for people to even go back to their homes where they registered to vote. And they said the low voter turnout can also be attributed to the Naira design. Talk to me about the Naira design, the reason why the Naira design was implemented, and whether it achieved its purpose so far.
Well, I think the Naira redesign has also something to do with the cashless economy. It has given value to Naira. It has made it possible to now use the lower currencies, the 50 kobo, the 1 naira, and the 200 naira note. And that has brought back that currency into circulation. It has also shored up the value of the naira. It has brought it back into the market. Part of other ones is that it has caused Nigerians to value their own currency. But there is a disadvantage that people are now trading in it. It has reduced crime. It has addressed part of kidnapping, reduced quite substantially, quite a moment, robbery, and this incident of people standing on the road and saying, "Give me money," because almost every person now knows that nobody carries cash.
Now, before we go, Senator Ita Inan, I understand you are seeking to become the next governor of Akwa Ibom.
Yes.
Tell me, what are your prospects of winning the gubernatorial election in Akwa Ibom?
Right now, we are waiting for the court to take a process to make a decision which can lead us to have a candidate. The APC, for now, perhaps is not on the ballot because we do not have a candidate yet. It is this legal process that will enable us have a candidate. So, but I believe that as I become a candidate, I have the goodwill of the people. I have been very effective in representing them as a member of the House of Assembly in the state, as the House of Representatives for 12 years. I was very productive in the Senate, very productive advisor to the President on National Assembly matters, very productive as advisor to the President on Niger Delta affairs, from where I resigned to contest this election. I believe that the reputation I have built and the network of individuals I have affected positively, and I have sold my character, the content of my character to them, will make it easy for the voters to say, we vote for APC, whose flag bearer is Senator Ita Enang.
Thank you very much.
Ita Solomon Enang is a former senior special assistant to Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari on Niger Delta affairs. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Cameroon, civil society, human rights defenders, and opposition political groups are expressing concern about the recent military agreement signed between the administration in Yaoundé and Russia. They say the accord could worsen the ongoing Anglophone crisis in Cameroon. They also say the government may decide not to engage in talks to resolve the conflict, but resort to Russian military assistance, including Wagner Group mercenaries, that would escalate tensions. The groups are now calling on the international community and Western partners to pressure the government to find a negotiated solution to the Anglophone crisis. For more about the Cameroon military's agreement with Russia and its anticipated impact, as well as Moscow's influence in Africa, I read Samuel Ikome Sako. He is the leader of the Southern Cameroon people.
The regime and the people around the regime have chosen to pivot towards Russia because they are acting contrary to the overall wish of the international community as we know it, the United States and Europe, which is to have a negotiated settlement. So they don't want a negotiated settlement. And instead, the West is considering sanctions, cutting off aid like the Trump administration did, I mean, military aid to Cameroon. So now, because they have decided to double down on the military option, they have to fall back on Russia, which is trying to expand its influence. So this is the reason.
How are Anglophone Cameroonians reacting to this?
We are really shocked and not too surprised, because we have always suffered from this culture of neglect from our traditional allies, or let me call them colonial allies. From the get-go, Britain just handed us over to these people, to the French Cameroon, and left, contrary to what the United Nations mandated on according to Resolution 1608 of the General Assembly of 1961. So we have been abandoned, because I don't think that this is the right way to do it. We were under the British administration, and we were expecting that at this time they should come to our side. And when they say that we should negotiate, they should be able to oblige the Republic of Cameroon to meet us on the table.
Why do you think the influence of Russia in Africa is becoming problematic and has to be challenged? Why do you think so?
It is because the Russians are using two legs to spread in Africa. They are using insecurity, and they are using a political unrest. Wherever they find political unrest or they see insecurity, they know that those embattled regimes, because they themselves are being crooked, they are looking for help elsewhere, because the worst in aid is usually conditional, and there are certain values that in many cases, like the United States, they want to see before they can help. So they go to where they just go to the market. Russia is a market for arms. So that's disturbing. That means too many arms are all over Africa now because of the Russian influence. So it is disturbing, because that means more insecurity for Africa. That means a slowdown to development and many more wars to fight on the continent.
What do you think is the best way forward to resolve this concern that you have, especially in Africa and particularly in Cameroon?
In Cameroon, we and then in the Central Africa sub-region, we see that Russia is spreading. They started their experiment in the Central African region around about 2 years ago in 2021. With that Central Africa Republic. And they succeeded. They are there now controlling the seat of power. And then that is what is going to have. It's now spreading. So what can America do? But you know, America withdrew, and the French withdrew their forces at the end of their agreement in 2017 in Central Africa Republic, and that gave the Russians the military agreement they had with the Central African Republic, defending that the country against all the insurgencies in that country. The agreement expired 2017, and they had to withdraw their troops. When a democratic regime has just been voted of Mr. Touadera in 2016, that withdrawal created a vacuum for the Russians to be invited. I'm saying that America should come in this time around, not to support some of these very crooked regimes that have already been compromised with the Russians, but to look at the forces within the next generation of leadership, choose their allies. Like in southern Cameroon, we are the traditional allies of America.
Samuel Ikome Sako is the leader of the Southern Cameroon people. He spoke with me from here in Washington.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America,
11 countries in Eastern and Southern Africa are experiencing a worrying cholera outbreak, United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, said Friday, as the organization appeals for $150 million to assist countries in the regions. UNICEF said in a statement, over 67,000 cases and an estimated 1,788 deaths have occurred in the regions, with Malawi and Mozambique bearing the heaviest burden. Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Dr. Paul Ngwakum, UNICEF Regional Health Advisor, Eastern and Southern Africa. Ngwakum says UNICEF and its partners are intervening rapidly.
In Southern Africa, you're having Malawi, which has the most important number of cases. And if you go to the Horn of Africa, where we are having other complications due to drought, you have Somalia, you have Kenya, you have Ethiopia. And these are complex situations because, you know, in parts of Ethiopia, there is insecurity. And almost in all of Somalia, there is insecurity. If you go to the Great Lakes, we're having cases in Burundi. We're having cases in Tanzania. And just a few days ago, we're having cases in another highly insecure country called South Sudan.
This appeal that you have, what exactly will it be used for to support these communities? I know, of course, there are multiple different factors depending on where you are.
Well, but you know, cholera is a disease which is due to infection because of consumption of either water that is contaminated or food that is contaminated. And these regions we are talking of are already going through drought. They are already going through a situation of very bad wash situations. Water and sanitation is bad. So we have to be able to provide water for these communities. In addition to that, you have to ensure that the communities are engaged, they participate, and there's what we call social behavior change, risk communication and community engagement to get them engaged. But outside that, we have to support case management as well, making sure that the people who unfortunately get infected by cholera have access to the treatment centers. And in the treatment centers, we have to provide supplies, which basically are infection prevention and control supplies and treatment supplies.
And you spoke of the statement itself, and you mentioned extreme weather patterns. Of course, we're seeing the drought in East Africa. We're also seeing Cyclone Freddy, which has made a return, an unprecedented, rare return. Can you talk about that and how, you know, these extreme weather patterns are really affecting your work in handling diseases such as cholera?
I think you're very right. Climate change is a challenge, big challenge. Either we have problems of access to water, no water, drought, or we have too much water, which are the situations brought about by the cyclones and the floods that not only unearth all the feces and other things that are going to contaminate the water that people are consuming, but also destroy homes and keep these people out of their normal habitat and exposing them to bigger risk because they don't have access to the sanitation that they have to be able to prevent themselves from infection, not only of cholera, but other diarrhea diseases.
Mm-hmm. And right now, per your estimations, the death toll is around 1,700, a little bit higher than that. Can you talk about that and what steps are being taken to alleviate and keep this number as low as possible?
If you're talking about the death toll for cholera, I think we are struggling to ensure that we keep the cholera case fatality rate below 1%. And for us to do that, we have to break three delays. The first delay is community engagement so that people seek for help on time. The second delay is ensuring that we have the treatment centers that are as near to the population as possible.
And let's wrap this up on the topic of prevention. Looking at all the underlying issues that have exacerbated cholera throughout Eastern and Southern Africa, what are some things you can tell the audience in terms of prevention? What can they do in the confines of what is available to them?
Well, number one is they have to understand the symptoms of cholera and they have to seek for help immediately. Cholera is one of the most simple diseases to understand. It's by ingestion of food or water that is contaminated by the bacteria. So they have to ensure that water that they are consuming is clean and potable, and they have to simply wash their hands with water and soap before meals and after using the toilet and making sure that the environment is cleaner.
Dr. Paul Ngwakum is UNICEF's Regional Health Advisor, Eastern and Southern Africa. He spoke with Tatenda Gumbo from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. The UN Refugee Agency reports violent clashes between armed groups and government forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo's eastern provinces have driven hundreds of thousands of people from their homes in the last few weeks. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
In February alone, nearly 300,000 people have fled across Rutshuru and Masisi territories in North Kivu province. The UN Refugee Agency reports this marks a dramatic escalation in fighting between these rival forces. It notes a resurgence of violence since March last year has displaced more than 800,000 people in DRC's Ituri, North and South Kivu provinces. More than 130 armed groups operate in the region. UNHCR spokesman Matthew Saltmarsh says they are responsible for widespread human rights violations, including arbitrary killings, kidnappings, extortion, forced recruitment, and rapes.
Civilians continue to pay a heavy and bloody price for the conflict. Women and children who barely escaped the violence are now sleeping out in the open. The needs of the vulnerable displaced populations are multiplying as already dire conditions deteriorate and resources in overcrowded locations buckle under the strain of arrivals.
Saltmarsh says the newly displaced arrive exhausted and traumatized by the grisly events they have witnessed. Among those fleeing, he says, are households who have repeatedly fled and been displaced by conflict. He says spontaneous displacement sites have sprung up in hazardous areas around Goma City, including in fields with pockets of hazardous volcanic gases. This, he says, has resulted in more lives lost. Most of the displaced, however, he says, are sheltering in host communities and spontaneous sites where conditions are dire and getting worse.
Where access permits, UNHCR teams are positioned to provide psychosocial counseling and community support to manage the traumas that displaced people are experiencing. With our partners, we're urgently scaling up the humanitarian and protection assistance to tackle the urgent needs stemming from overcrowding and inadequate shelter in spontaneous sites, as well as limited access to food and clean water.
The UNHCR reports violence has particularly surged from the Kichanga region in Masisi territory toward the strategically important city of Sake. It says an estimated 50,000 people are on the move, fleeing violence that erupted between Sake and Shasha locality on March 8th and 9th. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL starting this Saturday on The Voice of America.
Some women church leaders and civil society leaders say South Sudan is struggling to find lasting peace more than a month after Pope Francis and two other church leaders visited the country. Pope Both Balwang, SPLM-IO Director for Information, says the Pope's message of peace is under threat following the move to oust Defense Minister Teni. Martin Ia Lomoro, Secretary General of the government's high-level standing committee, which oversees implementation of the peace agreement, says differences among the parties does not mean leaders have forgotten the Pope's message of peace. For VOA, Manyang David Maya reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
In February, Pope Francis, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, and Moderator General of the Church of Scotland, Ian Greenshields, arrived in Juba on an ecumenical pilgrimage. The church leaders held meetings with political leaders, women, representatives of internally displaced persons, and others, and asked all of them to work for peace. Large billboards bearing Pope Francis' image can still be seen along roads in Juba. But some people here say either the pontiff's words have been forgotten or some of his words have yet to take effect on the leaders of South Sudan. Lily Richard Kenyi, chairperson of the Women's League at the South Sudan Council of Churches, says the pilgrimage of the three religious leaders will be remembered as a blessing to South Sudan, and the impact of their visit will be seen over time.
For every bad situation, better things will always come slowly, just like sickness. It comes quickly, but after taking medicine consecutively, healing comes. It takes time. The same way, reconciliation will come slowly. Soon, we shall hear good things in our country.
Kenyu says, while the country navigates toward peace, churches here have become more united than ever before by collectively praying for peace. Some civil society groups say the country's leaders have not taken the Pope's message of peace, love and reconciliation seriously. Edmond Yakani is executive director for local rights group Community Empowerment for Progress Organization.
The level of the impact of Pope's visit and messages to our leaders was not seriously observed. So it's demonstrated by the disagreement that now our leaders are facing. And you can see how in the public domain, people are questioning the latest decree of the president. Our leaders have not received the messages of Pope, and the impact of Pope's messages on them is very low. And also they have not respected and honored the visit of Pope.
Last week, President Salva Kiir fired SPLM-IO's Angelina Teng as defense minister and issued another decree swapping control of the ministries of interior and defense. The 2018 peace deal designated that the head of the Ministry of Defense be run by a SPLM-IO official and the Ministry of Interior be run by an SPLM-IG official. Pok Both Baluang, acting press secretary in the office of the first vice president, says some South Sudanese leaders are betraying Pope Francis' message.
Yeah, the presidential decree and the presidential order issued by the president recently, it is a clear indication that the president did not capture the messages of peace, unity, and forgiveness. These are the messages left by the church leaders. And we believe from our part, we are taking these messages very seriously.
Martin Elia Lomoro, South Sudan's Cabinet Affairs Minister, who also served as Secretary General of the government's high-level standing committee, which oversees implementation of the peace agreement, says the government takes the Pope's message of peace seriously, but says Pope Francis did not play a role in the signing of the 2018 peace deal.
Pope Francis was not a mediator in the agreement. He just came to for his love for the people of South Sudan. He knows the potential of this country. He knows that the people of South Sudan have suffered enormously and that they don't deserve any more sufferings. So he came to support us like any other leaders of the region.
Lomoro says Kiir's decision to fire Defense Minister Teng and swap control of two ministries are mere administrative issues that requires administrative solutions.
These are things that the leadership is fully aware of how it has affected the thinking of people, and we are all committed to make sure this is resolved peacefully. This is an internal administrative issue which can be handled by the leadership.
President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar are scheduled to meet tomorrow. Their meeting has been already rescheduled twice. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The Young Teranga Lions of Senegal beat their neighbors Gambia 2-0 on Saturday to win their first ever Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations. Goals from forward Sulemani Faye and midfielder Mamadou Camara in the Egyptian capital of Cairo were enough to secure Senegal victory over their arch rivals. The West African side qualified to Saturday's final with a 100% record, winning all their matches without conceding a goal. The Young Teranga Lions were playing their fourth Under-20 African Cup of Nations final, having finished runners-up in 2015, 2017 and 2019. In the CAF Champions League, South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns put up a performance for the days, crushing record champions Al Ahly 5-2 in Pretoria on Saturday to become the second team to confirm their place in the quarterfinals of the CAF Champions League. The Brazilians were in emphatic form, dominating the Egyptians who moved to the top of Group B with 10 points. 6 ahead of Al Ahly, who remain third. Sundowns have now realized an unassailable lead from third and have affirmed their place in the last eight. Elsewhere, Massiana Naït climbed off the bench to score the winner in the 86th minute as Algerian side JS Kabylie came from a goal down to beat DR Congo's AS Vita Club 2-1 and cement their hold on second spot in Group A. Defending champions Wydad Athletic Club inched closer to the quarterfinals after beating Petro de Luanda 2-0 in Angola on Saturday. And now to Kenya. In an unfortunate incident, two football players were on Saturday evening struck dead by lightning while playing a friendly match in Kisii County. Sammy Musa, age 20, and Joshua Niagarisi, age 21, lost their lives during the friendly game between local teams Mayansi FC and Yegiti FC at the Mayansi playgrounds in Kitutu, Chachi North constituency. Two more players were seriously injured but are in stable conditions after being rushed to a hospital in neighboring Nyamira County. And staying with Kenya, Team Kenya has won the overall title at the East and Central Africa Athletics Under-18 and Under-20 Championships that ended on Saturday at the Benjamin Parker Stadium in Dar es Salaam. Kenya collected 37 medals, 24 gold, 10 silver and 3 bronze to top in the two-day championships that attracted 6 countries. In badminton news, more than 30 young stars from different schools have taken part in the second outing of the National Badminton League at the CFK Badminton Academy in Kampala. The Ugandan League is being played to keep youngsters active as they look forward to other competitive events. In basketball news, the 2023 Regular Basketball Africa League got underway on Saturday, March 11th, with the Sahara Conference hosting 6 teams in a 15-game schedule at the Dakar Arena on the outskirts of the Senegalese capital city. And that'll be all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one month's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Now that the chairman of the Independent National Election Commission, INEC, had declared Tinubu had won the elections, we have seen strong opposition from the parties, mainly the Labour and PDP. These opposition have been followed by demonstrations in many parts of Nigeria, and we should be grateful that there has not been much bloodshed during these demonstrations. For this, we should give our sincere thanks to the leaders of the opposition parties that have urged their followers to exercise maximum restraint and to demonstrate peacefully. In the meantime, it is an appropriate time for us to look at some of the other statistics that have been published by IMEC. The first is the issue of turnout. You may recall that INEC had announced initially that 93 million Nigerians have registered to vote. A day before the start of election, INEC also announced that 87 million have received their voting cards showing an intention to vote. Thirdly, there have been speculation that the youth vote, which otherwise have been lagged in the past, would be opened up this time. Despite all of this, everyone thought that there will be a massive turnout, even though in the last few days, people wondered whether the bank exchange problem would reduce turnout. But all of this does not really allow for the very, very low turnout of 29%. This is Nigeria, the largest African population, an important power in Africa. How can that be explained? This is true that in some mature democracy, turnouts have been going low and low. But this is not true for Africa. African elections have always seen large-scale turnout. In other countries of the world, like in Australia, voting is mandatory. In other countries, they have set a red line that if the turnout is below that red line, then the election is cancelled. I believe Nigeria should be exploring what it could do in the future to minimize such low turnout. The second baffling announcement by the chairman of INEC is to say that the presidential candidate of APC had fulfilled all the conditions and that allowed him to declare him the winner. But to have a major candidate of a major country like Nigeria having only 37% vote count, how could such a leader maintain calm and go through a mandate? So this is really, really something which Nigeria and Africa should look at. A third point was how the whole picture was portrayed. The first one was that the candidate Tinubu won 12 of the 36 states. Atiku Abubakar won 12 of the 36 states. And Peter Obi won 11 plus the federal state. What does that mean? This is something serious, and after everything has settled down, it will be wise for Nigerians to look again at their election laws, because many people have become aware that in Africa, there is always the provision for the winner to win in the first round 50 plus 1. This is not the case in Nigeria. Surely, the baffling statistics in this election do not go well for a maturing and advancement of democracy in the African continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
This young love will get him in it. for my perfume. I want light smoke with my lighter. This your color, no be faithful, mama. My banana, oh my banana, go to my banana. Show me power, move me over. Let me love my life, give my like I, give my like I. My Sudan, ah ah ah. 'Cause you dey amazing, you dey amazing. Your body amazing, don't be late, don't keep me waiting. No procrastinating, time to get up.
Dollars. Don't be a cheap date, just pop the bottles. Lames in a sec and I'm blaming the net. Let's do the money dance, one die for a fade. Keep it in the fam, they cut my cuss. The pillows in the air, it's soft, it's moisture. Never your defense to block the solar. Pass the Mary Jane, this world my oyster, yeah. Los Angeles, give me more, more ambience. BBC One, smoking. It's international motion. Let me do my dance. Let me count my bands. I'm thinking of a master plan. Reprogram, reset. Stay focused, revenge. Until then, foot on neck. Just trust in me. I built you a masterpiece. This world not enough for me. Kiss me in the tree, sing my for me. Oh, close company. Energy, feel no punch on me. This luxury. I be DJ somebody. Yeah. Oh, the mommy's on a E-tune. T-shirt off white look. You know, Abu Dhabi food. Yeah, sweet on my neck. Diamonds ain't green, chillin'. I sleep when I'm dead. Yeah.
One girl, not enough for me. Two girls, not enough for me. Three girls, not enough for me. Not enough for me. Not enough for me. Four girls, not enough for me. Five girls, not enough for me. Six girls, not enough for me. Not enough for me. Nah, nah. One girl, not enough for me.
Two
girls, not enough for me.
Three times.
Three girls, not enough for me. Not enough for me. Not enough for me. Four, five. Four girls, not enough for me. Five girls, not enough for me. Six girls, not enough for me. Not enough for me. Nah, nah.
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hove, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a wise man never knows all, only fools know everything. And Your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.